variety Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. And I have returned to this
Neil is back.
Show to bring words of wisdom about one of the movies that comes out this week.
One of the four.
There are four movies that comes out this, that are coming out this week. Films like Killers with Ashton Kutcher and Marmaduke with a dog. And then two other movies that you might actually want to go see in Get Him to the Greek and Splice. But we'll get to that later. We'll have, I'm sure, a rousing debate about this.
Okay.
But before we get to all that, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can go over to fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes. Just search in the iTunes store. You'll find Fat Guys at the Movies. Subscribe to us, download us, what have you. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 614-388-8735. I know the number works because I just renewed the service on that number, so it works. You can also get us on the Twitter. You can get me at twitter.com/rejects. You can get Kevin at twitter.com/KevinCarr. There you have it. So what's
Welcome back. Well, I do want to say welcome back.
It's good to be alive.
You took a break from Sex and the City last week.
Yeah, it really just, you know, it felt like the right thing to do.
It probably was. And Fozzie did a great job. Fozzie came on and did a great job reviewing Sex and the City. We're actually going to have him on in the middle segment to talk about box office, to sort of review the box office of Sex and the City versus Prince of Persia versus Shrek, of all people.
Yeah, I heard there was some sort of wager. That will be,
there was a wager. There was a push-up wager that one of our fans was requesting, and since you refused to do it. And I knew even if you lost, you'd just sit in your chair and grunt, and you wouldn't actually get on the floor and do push-ups, because I know you. I know your ways.
That's known as what happens before lunch here at Reject HQ.
Anyways, I don't even want to think about that. But yeah, so we welcome Neil back, and moving well into the summer season. I said to somebody, I did a radio interview this week, and I said, you know, before I start reviewing movies, let's just look at this summer. We're heading into June, and it just is not looking good in the box office for just good movies out there. There's going to be some nice ones that I like, but you know, it's not going to be like 2008 where you had Iron Man and Indiana Jones and Dark Knight. I mean, you had this massively awesome summer. And Tropic Thunder. I mean, you had a lot of stuff coming out in 2008, and 2010 is not going to be remembered the same way. You agree?
Well, yes.
Okay. You just didn't want to agree with me.
No, there's a much bigger discussion, I guess, here about the entire summer and the lackluster nature of it and all of that.
I think it's just the way things.
I don't have time for all the things I want to say about how poor this summer has been.
It's just sort of like the way things roll. Like the summer of 2007 wasn't that great. It had some good hits, but like Pirates of the Caribbean 3 was Spider-Man 3 was you know. I mean, you had like Die Hard and Transformers was cool, but then I mean, you had a lot of the summer of 2007 wasn't nearly as good as it happens like this.
Well,
and
I think the interesting thing about this summer is that not only do you have the, I guess, perceived quality issue, where it feels like there aren't any good movies coming out this summer, you also have financial woe, you know, because even in 2007, when it felt like there weren't a lot of good movies coming out, there were still a lot of movies making a lot of money. And this summer, actually May is down for the first time in a long, long time. So since 2001, this is the lowest.
I don't necessarily think that's just a financial hit. I think it's just people aren't going as much.
I just think that the movies aren't that good. And they're not being marketed correctly.
Well, I don't know. A lot of them aren't going to be saved from marketing. That's
greater
true. Discussion.
I mean, it's the combination of mediocre marketing and mediocre movies.
Yeah. Let's move ahead and start talking about some mediocre movies.
Oh, speaking of movies that aren't that good.
Yeah, let's start off with Killers. Who cares what happens here, because they didn't show us to anybody besides Ashton Kutcher, who claims to have pirated the first 10 minutes. Whoop-de-doo.
Surprise! I'm back! Stop hurting him!
Psycho killer!
Who do you work for?
Let's just say that I work for the blah, 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 and they gave me a license to blah.
Your legs.
Oh, no, you are not getting off that.
Spread them! It's gonna be a long day.
Did he really pirate the first 10 minutes of the movie?
I don't think it's really called pirating. He's calling it pirating, but, you know,
seems like a publicity stunt.
Yeah, just a tad. And it's this one made news because they didn't show it to anybody. And
very
they didn't show it to the director's mom. Yeah, and they're like, well, we want everyone to form their own opinions. It's like, basically, they don't want critics to tell you how terrible it's going to be. So I want to publicize that as much as possible, that they're not showing this to anybody. And it's not even like... There's movies that they don't show regionally, that they don't show in your city or my city, but they've shown them to critics. And that's cool. I can respect that. I can understand maybe you don't want to put it in all the markets. But when you make a big stink about saying, we're not marketing, we're not going to show this to anybody because that's how cool we are. Yeah, your movie's
going to Well, and they may, you know, when you make up some BS about, well, we just want everybody, we want fans and critics to discover it together.
I don't know
That's
if anyone
some
could
hippie
be called
crap,
a
f- okay?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone could be called a fan of this movie.
I don't, you know, and I was saying off the air that the problem for Killers is that there's clearly a much better movie with the same premise coming out later in the summer in the Night and Day with Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz. Clearly a better film, and I know this based on trailers alone because it's all I've seen from either movie. I mean, so why even bother with the killer with this Killers movie? Or
yeah. Yeah. Well, and this the bottom line: this movie's gonna suck. They've proved it's gonna suck. And I mean, I've talked to Ashton Kutcher.
Well, hey,
he's a
I
nice
mean,
guy.
It could be good. I'm just saying it doesn't matter at this point.
No one's gonna see it, and don't they shouldn't. So right. There, I'm done talking about this. Let's talk about something else. That's somewhat.
Well, the next movie we're talking about is Marmaduke, and it is about a great big Dane.
Or
a big
great
Dane. A big friggin' dog who moves to California and causes havoc with his family.
Hey there, I'm Marmaduke. You might be wondering why I'm on lockdown. Well, it's not because of this.
Marmaduke!
Or this. Ah, jeez!
Marmaduke!
Or even this.
Marmaduke, no!
Oops. No, it's because my stepbro Carlos and I are being shipped air freight.
Hey, let me out of here. I'm not an animal.
Oh, yeah, I am.
California.
That's right. We're moving to the OC.
This one is, I consider this Marley and Me with Owen Wilson on the other side of the leash.
Although I read the comics. I don't think Marmaduke dies
comics.
At the end.
No, I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen. This one's for kids. I mean, I haven't seen this yet because they screened it, and I didn't screen it in my market, but I'm going to catch it. I'm going to take my kids. Who it's really going to be for. I mean, there's all this hatred for Marmaduke out there, but I'm like, it's Alvin and the Chipmunks with a dog. It's probably what it's going to be. So.
Well, you know, and it's probably going to be stupid.
But it's for kids.
Right. And kids are pretty stupid.
I don't know about that, but most, you know.
I mean, compared to me.
There's a different. No, they're brilliant compared to you. But, I don't know. It depends on what kids you're talking about. You're talking about goats.
What's going on anymore.
No, but you know,
I'm sure
this is not for fanboys. This is for kids and families, and you know, so I don't know. It'll be cute. I'm gonna go see it. I'm gonna take my kids. I'll probably like it.
Fair enough. And it's time for us to go to a break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about two movies that we may or may not have seen.
I've never wanted to end a segment more than this one.
And we are back on Fat Guys in the Movies. It feels like that break went on forever.
Well, it did. We had a lot of stuff going on in that break. We were stirring chili. There were Sling Blade impressions.
Sling Blade, yes. But now we're going to move on
to... I'm calling a Sling Blade, I call it Kaiser Blade.
Interesting. To several movies, two movies, in fact, that we're going to probably be able to discuss in a little bit more depth than the last two.
Yeah.
Based on having seen them or one of them, in my case.
Yeah.
The first of which is a movie that I did see. It's Get Him to the Greek, in which Russell Brand comes back from for getting Sarah Marshall, and Jonah Hill has to get him from London to the Greek Theater in Los Angeles.
Next month is the 10-year anniversary of Al the Snow live at the Greek Theater. We could put on an anniversary concert. He's rock music personified.
I'm a motorist.
I want you to go to London to pick him up, then bring him back here for the show at the Greek. Can you handle it?
Definitely.
From the minute you touch down in London, you have 72 hours to get Al the Snow to the Greek Theater in Los Angeles.
Can we please go?
Doesn't it make sense that we would stay here and have the time of your life?
Oh, so there you it's all you. You've seen this one, so I want to let you go.
Have you not seen?
No, I have seen it. I did.
Oh, you have?
I'm just curious, or do you want me to go first?
I've also seen it. Well, here's the deal.
Ooh.
It's funny.
That's a trademark phrase, you know.
It's a funny movie. Because it centers on the eldest Snow character from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, the rock star.
Yes.
And it's just as kind of smart and funny, and it combines this. There's kind of a sweet story at the core of it. The straight man, Aaron.
I don't know about that,
Hill.
But...
okay. Well, no, there's kind of an interesting relationship story, both with Jonah Hill's character and his girlfriend, played by Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men, and also like this friendship story that kind of evolves between him and Aldous Snow. But there's also the Gross Out movie that sits on top of that other story that overwhelms it, and that movie works incredibly well.
There's a lot of vomiting in this movie.
There's a lot of vomiting in this one. There's a lot of P. Diddy in this one, which works a lot better than you'd think it would.
P. Diddy's actually one of the funniest things in this movie.
It's one of the best things about the whole movie. Yeah. Russell Brand's very funny, as he was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's kind of a very simple, straightforward, goes exactly where you think it's going to go.
Even when you don't want it to go there.
Even when you don't want it to go there movie. I thought it was very funny. You know, I enjoyed Russell Brand's kind of brand of humor. I also really loved Rose Byrne in this movie.
Oh my God, she is so hot.
She plays his girlfriend slash wife slash baby mama pop star, and she's hilarious.
And hot.
And hot, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's really a different role than I've ever seen from her, so very enjoyable.
Yeah, she normally plays a little more, shall we say, respectable roles. She normally plays like a more intellectual character. You know, she like plays a doctor or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, no. And she normally she's been in a few like good romantic comedies and things like that. It's just, she's never played a character who is so absurd.
Yeah.
You know, so very fun. I had a lot of fun with the movie. So I enjoyed it. What'd you think?
Well, you know what? I was dreading it. I will tell you that. I was dreading it because I was like, this is like making a sequel to The Princess Bride with the character, with the Andre the Giant and Wallace Stone characters. Or Wallace Shawn characters. I mean, it's like they're very funny in Princess Bride, but I don't know if I would have wanted to see an entire movie of the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was a little scared going in, because I was like, oh, this is going to be terrible. And then I saw it, and I'm like, you know, the first half is absolutely fall on your butt laughing funny. It has some incredibly hilarious scenes, some incredible comic timing by everybody involved. Not just P. Diddy and Jonah Hill, but a lot of the extras and the extra characters and Russell Brand's very funny. So I think it works really, really well. It kind of completely unravels in the middle. And it has one of those scenes in the middle where it's just like they were like, we really want this to be this raucous, crazy moment. It's the Jeffrey moment, and it just does. It just isn't edited well, or is there something about it just doesn't click? And it never
Are
quite.
You kidding? Tell me you didn't want to get a Jeffrey after that scene.
Well, there were parts that were very funny, but it just didn't pace itself right. And then there's
the furry walls.
There's another very awkward the furry walls. Scene involving three people later on that also
was funny. I will
say this.
That's one thing I forgot about when I was talking about the movie is towards the end of the film, there's a very awkward scene that just, it's really awkward.
It's not necessarily funny. I think it'll be funnier on video.
It's funny in retrospect when you walk away and you're like, wow, I survived watching that scene.
Yeah, there's a scene like that in Splice too, but we'll get to that later. But... But the thing is, I mean, it reminds me a lot of Office Space. There's a lot of movies, or Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais, where like the first half is really, really clever and funny, and it hits hard with the comedy. And then they get about halfway through and they go, well, we can't have a movie that's just goofy the whole way through. We got to put a story, and we got to put characters, and we got to put depth in it. And that's where they fail. Because you take a movie like Team America, which was that puppet movie by the South Park guys. That's funny all the way through. They don't at any point try and redeem the story and characters. They just say, we're just going to be stupid and funny through the whole film. And that's why that worked. Whereas this one in, like, you know, Office Space and Invention of Lying, once they try to put a story to it, it kind of falls apart because you're like, well, it's not really about having heart in this movie. It's about being crazy and stupid. And it's just,
well,
that's where it stumbled.
You know, I kind of like that about Get Him to the Greek. And I like that about Nick Stoller as a director and writer, is that he doesn't shy away from having a little bit of sentimentality in his movies.
Did he direct Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Yeah.
See, I thought it worked in that.
I think he strikes a decent balance between the absurd kind of gross humor and a little bit of sentimentality. And it's, I mean, it's all surface level stuff, but I think
it's not really deep.
It's not deep at all. Yeah. But A for effort.
I think it worked. I mean, it didn't ruin the film, but it does definitely. The first half is better, but it is funny. That's true. It's a lot funnier than I thought it would be. The chronology. I still haven't figured out the chronology or the sexually transmitted disease tracing on this film. Because I don't know if when they made this movie, if they went back and watched Forgetting Sarah Marshall to make sure it all fit. It does?
I actually interviewed Nick Stoller, and he said it happens after.
It still doesn't make sense.
And they completely disregard Jonah Hill's character.
Not even that, but I mean, it's like, it doesn't work. Because I'm not going to go into it because I don't want to go through, you know, talk about the plot. But it doesn't actually fit. I mean, it's sort of like when you watch Empire Strikes Back. And you're like, well, wait, you know, the Millennium Falcon goes and it's away for a weekend and Luke goes to Dagobah and he's training and they're like, oh, you've learned so much. Was he gone the same amount of time? I mean, no one changes clothes on the Millennium Falcon. And from Lucasfilm, they're like, no, it's 6 months. Even though Millennium Falcon was gone for like 3 days.
Dude, tell me you haven't worn the same clothes for 6 months before. Haven't we all?
I'm in the middle of it. Well, I got to be on TV every week. So I do have to, contract, I have to shower, shave, and change at least once a week.
Let's grade Get Him to the Greek. I say it kind of rocks.
I have to say it kind of rocks as well.
That's right.
Boom.
Sweet. Now, I'm going to go ahead and default agree with you on this next movie because I, for some reason, have not seen it.
I wouldn't be surprised you not seen it simply because you don't like creepy, kind of scary, icky movies.
Yeah.
And it's Splice. And let's just say it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature, fool.
Heart rate stable. If we don't use human DNA now, someone else will.
Regulators and politicians, they tear us to pieces.
We can go to jail for this.
Human cloning is illegal. This won't be human. Not entirely. It's coming out.
It's not due for months.
It's slippery. It's...
What was that?
A mistake.
This one is a thriller horror movie sci-fi thing, and it's directed by the guy who did Cube, which was, I love Cube. It was a great film. Very few people saw it, and even fewer people saw Cypher, his follow-up. But this one, it's about these Sarah Polley and Adrian, or whatever the heck his name is, the guy who won the Academy.
Adrian Brody,
really ugly guy. Yeah, him. And they genetically engineer, they splice together a bunch of genes from different creatures, and they create this new creature that has some violence issues, and they don't know exactly what it's thinking. Now, I didn't see the whole movie. I saw Splick. I didn't see the whole thing because the lightning shut down the theater. I mean, literally, Mother Nature shut the movie down 10 minutes before it was over. So
I saw Splick.
First hour and a half was pretty awesome because it goes back to those creepy like 90s horror films that I would watch in these sci-fi and horror movie conventions late at night, and no one's going to see this, but it's a great movie, very disturbing, and it has a great scene in the middle that's equally as disturbing as the one in Get Him to the Greek, with very similar stuff happening.
Nice, cool.
So I'm going to say it rocks.
All right, sweet. We'll be back.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are into the box office segment now. Now, Neil, since you weren't here last week, or you, I mean, you were around, you just weren't on the show.
I was actually in space.
Yes, you went to another planet.
Well, this is what I do when I take a week off from Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, because that's your only commitment.
Yep.
You're not doing anything else.
Nothing else going on.
We had Fozzie Bear come on as the guest host.
The only thing that bothers me about Fozzie Bear is that his name is not real.
How do you know?
No one would name their child Fozzie Bear.
Well, maybe his last name's Bear. It's not even B-E-A-R, it's B-A-R-E.
I don't know.
To avoid any sort of copyright infringement.
I'm skeptical of people who don't use their real names when they predict the box office.
Okay. Well, he was kind of wrong.
See?
I was kind of wrong, too. Actually, we were both disastrously wrong because Shrek came in at number one. But I went ahead and, since we had a little bit of a wager going on, I went ahead and recorded the box office segment with him. So we'll move on to that. If with your permission, sir.
Sure, why not?
Well, here we are with Fozzie Bear. We had him on last week and wanted to do a little quick pickup with him because, we covered the movies last week and there was a little bit of a crazy thing that happened in the box office. Welcome back, Fozzie.
Well, it's great to be here.
Yeah, it is great to be here. Back in this magical studio in the sky. We actually have to settle some things here because we had a bet going down on the box office. Care to refresh the listeners' minds on what the bet was?
Well, since I'm a huge fan of Sex and the City, I said that Sex and the City was going to take the weekend, and it was the better movie, in my opinion. Right. Now, since you're a huge Jake Gyllenhaal fan, I think the leader of his fan club, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you
Jake
said
Gyllenhaal, Jake Gyllenhaal for us, and that's with eight A's. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Exactly. Since you're the leader of that fan club and own the website, you said that Prince of Persia was going to take the weekend. Now,
that's right.
Tell us what happened.
Well, actually, Shrek took the weekend, and nobody's a fan of that.
Yeah.
but yeah, Shrek came in kind of like from behind and took it at $57 million, which is actually really quite good. It only dropped 19% from last week, which actually is sort of par for the course. For DreamWorks movies, How to Train Your Dragon kind of did this where it had a decent opening, but it wasn't huge, and it kind of came back and did some really good business the following weekends. So maybe people aren't rushing out to see these DreamWorks movies for some reason in the opening weekend, but they have a little longer life in them. And also the 3D ticket prices probably didn't hurt.
Sure. People, it was a long weekend. People had to do stuff with the kids, and they had people
family
visiting
stuff. Yeah. And you didn't have you weren't going to take your kids to see Sex and the City, or maybe you were, and that would
gotta
be a bad
start.
Idea.
They got to learn sometime.
They're like, "Daddy, what's an orgasm?"
What's my labia?
Yeah, that's right. No, that's actually a joke from the movie. So you get more points than I do.
You're right. I paid attention.
anyways. But even if, then I said, well, because I was on Twitter saying, what are we going to do? But even if you look at the weekend, I say, well, let's just say whether Prince of Persia or Sex and the City wins, whoever has to do the push-ups. And it turns out that over the three-day weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Sex and the City won.
What?
By like just under $1 million, like $31 million to $31 million and change to $30 million and change for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But when you factor in Memorial Day, Prince of Persia wins by about $2 million. So it's 37.8 to 36. I'm sorry, by $1 million. So it's about $1 million each, depending on which spread you look at. And when I say spread, I'm talking about the spread of 3 days. I'm not talking about Kim Cattrall.
We're right there, Kevin.
So what do we do here? Because, first of all, neither of them won the weekend. But if you say who won which spread, it depends. So I won the four-day, you won the three-day. So, I don't want to disappoint our fans and not have, I don't want to welch on the bet, and I'm sure you don't want to.
Oh, heavens no.
Oh, heavens no. So I was thinking we may just have to both. We could use some push-ups, I think, both of us.
Well, yeah. Well, I warn you, my family.
you don't sound too enthusiastic.
I'm not enthusiastic about it at all. My entire family has congenitally weak upper body strength. That's our lot in life. If we were doing donkey kicks, I would do them all night. But
okay.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm willing to do it. However,
donkey
I
kicks,
say,
no problem. But donkey punches,
exactly.
You're not going to be involved in.
That's Sex and the City 3. Sex and the City 3, donkey punched.
I would see that. I would see that in a heartbeat.
No, well, I guess what I can do, I will do push-ups. I'm glad to do half. I'll do, how about this? Since I'll do 4 push-ups since you won the 4-day weekend, and you can do 3 push-ups since I won the 3-day weekend.
I think that's fair.
And another small caveat, since my movie was Sex and the City, I'm going to do girl push-ups.
Oh, okay. Well, since you have congenitally weak upper arms.
Exactly.
I'm glad we don't live in the same city, because you'd be asking me to move all the time. You'd be like, and when I say move, you'd be like, I bought a bookshelf. Can you help me bring it up? Because my weak arms, I'm like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
I have groceries. I can't do it. I'm here.
Okay, so well, do you want to go first or should I go first? I can go first.
Well, I'll go. I'm already actually on my knees. I have been since we started talking.
Well, that's for something else.
Yeah, completely.
That's for something else entirely. We won't go into.
All right. So I don't even know if I remember how to do push-ups, but I guess, like, all right, I'm gonna count off.
Lay on the floor face down.
Uh-huh.
Push with your arms.
Right.
And then when your arms are straight, that's one. And then go back down. And when your face hits the floor, that's the end of it. So one.
Okay. There's one. Oh. Mm-hmm. One. Okay. Two. This is thrilling radio, isn't it? Oh, my God. And three. Oh, that's rough.
You didn't really do push-ups, did you?
I did. Yeah, I actually am. I wish I had a webcam right now. How does Jack Palance do this? Like, one-armed.
Yeah, he did one arm at the Academy Awards.
This is why he's dead.
Well, he was also very old.
Oh, four.
Okay, so you did four. I thought I was supposed to. You did four because I won the 4-day.
Exactly.
And I'm sure there are no pictures to actually verify this. We just have grunting and straining on your end.
My dog is looking at me really weird now. Like, what are you doing out of the chair? You never get out of the chair.
That's not what you do on your knees.
Exactly.
All right, so I guess now I have to do I do three. Is that what it is?
Three. Go for it.
Right. Should I make, like, crappy labia puns every push-up?
Yeah, I'm going to challenge you with that. Bring it.
Okay, all right, bring it. Okay, let me see if I can think of it.
How many labia puns can there be?
I'll tell you what I can do. I can name 3 things involved with Sex and the City at each push-up.
Okay.
Is that better? That's probably a little more appropriate. I'm getting down on the floor right now in the magical studio in the sky. My dog is also likewise looking askance at me. All right. And I'm up and down and one. Kim Cattrall. And two old ladies. And three. Bad puns about labia and lady parts. Okay.
I don't think three. That didn't sound real in the least.
That was totally real. That was totally real. I got the red face and a light head to prove it.
I want to see you go to the gym sometime. You're just screaming. Like, horse face!
You know what I'd love to do? And I'll leave you on this, Fozzie. What I'd love to do is I'd love to take a camera and videotape myself taking a Pilates class.
Yeah.
Because anyone who knows anything about fitness knows that Pilates are all about core muscles. And while I've got a lot of core, none of it's muscles. And my weight proportions are, and mass is totally bizarre. So, anywho.
You can do that. I will go to a yoga class and I'll just videotape myself swearing and farting through the whole thing.
That would be awesome. Do it in the, don't they do naked hot yoga?
Okay, I'm on it.
Swearing and farting in naked hot yoga. Well, you've heard it here first. On Fat Guys at the Movies.
I'll send the video. That'll be the new next episode.
Thank you again, Fozzie, for coming on to talk and grunt.
It's always a pleasure, except tonight. Normally it is.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, there you go. Fozzie and I did push-ups.
Hey, good for you guys.
Well, so we got our exercise.
Good to know that somebody around here is getting some exercise.
What do you think is going to win this weekend?
You know, it's interesting because I don't want to say Shrek because I don't really think Shrek is powerful enough of a film. to win for a third week in a row. But then I look at all of the releases this week, and I have no idea what could overtake Shrek. I mean, Killers is not going to do well at all.
I don't even think Killers is.
Get Him to the Greek is not going to do extremely well. There's two reasons. One, Get Him to the Greek is an R-rated comedy that is not. I mean, it's not. It doesn't have a ton of momentum per se. It's going to do decent. It's going to do Sarah Marshall business, maybe a little bit better. But even Sarah Marshall only made what, 30 million, 25 million.
Yeah, but like Sarah Marshall had a lot more stuff hanging on it. This isn't even really a sequel, and unless you really know about the movie, you don't realize it's a spinoff necessarily.
Well, yeah. I think it'll do in that range, that $25 million range, which is, probably won't be enough to win the weekend. No. Splice, I don't think it's going to do well. Both Get Him to the Greek and Splice are opening not as wide.
Like 25?
Yeah, Splice is in 2,500 theaters. Get Him to the Greek is in 2,700 theaters, and that's I really feel like Marmaduke's going to win the weekend.
I totally have my money on Marmaduke, simply because it's a June movie. That's the other thing with Get Him to the Greek. I see that much more of a August kind of movie.
Maybe a March movie.
Yeah, it's not a summer tentpole kind of movie, and Splice kind of the same way. I think Splice is just going to get completely lost. I compared it to somebody the other night, to Hostel 2.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Hostel 2 released in the first week of June and it just vaporized. It disappeared. Whereas the first Hostel opened like the first week of January, which mm-hmm. is totally when you'd put release a movie like that. And so I think throwing an intense thriller out there in the summer is not a good idea. It just gets lost, you know, with amid all the other family films and big event movies and that kind of stuff. Even though this week doesn't have anything, well, family film, you got Marmaduke. That's why and Shrek. It's had two weekends at the top. It's even at 50 some million, even if it drops only 25%, it's you're still talking, you know, it's only going to make 30 some million, if that.
Right.
Even if it has a very low drop, which it won't, it's going to drop a lot lower because it had a much better staying power that last weekend because it was a holiday weekend.
So. Right.
I think Marmaduke's going to win. And it's going to win like with 30 million.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's kind of unfortunate because the two better movies, arguably, are Get Him to the Greek and Splice. And I think I would be surprised if either of the two made it into the top five.
Yeah. And the other reason I don't think Get Him to the Greek is going to play like The Hangover is part of the thing with The Hangover is it was outrageous from beginning to end. And people came out of that going, oh my God, you have to see that. And wait till the ending credits.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a penis in the ending credits.
That's true.
Spoiler alert. A year later.
Just let you know.
But yeah. I mean, you're right. It was a movie so intensely funny that you told people, you walked out of it and you said, you know, you really kind of need to see this movie. It's that unique.
Yeah. And so when the final thing comes through with Get Him to the Greek, there's really no moment that I'd be like, I can't point to one moment that I'd be like, oh my God, this thing is so crazy.
Right.
I mean, it's still out there, but it's just it doesn't surprise you.
Right.
And it shocks because it's gross.
Speaking of things that people need to see to believe that it exists, I'm predicting a good comeback for Human Centipede.
I'm sorry, did I just belch in your ear?
No. I have my headset pretty much turned off at this point.
Oh, okay. So. You're not even listening to me.
No, I'm not.
You're just reading my Twitter feed and just assuming.
Exactly. All right. Moving on.
Speaking of Twitter, we got some phone calls from Twitter fans out there. We got this actually a couple weeks ago, and this is from Thomas from Seattle, but we just didn't play it because we forgot. I forgot. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But here it is. Here's Thomas's voicemail from Seattle.
Hey, Kevin. It's Thomas from Seattle. I was calling in to talk about how, like, the fanboys and the geeks and all of us out there, are we too fickle a lot? Like, by that I mean, like, right now Christopher Nolan is, like, this god and how, you know, our world revolves around whatever movie he's going to make next. But if he had, like, a few clunkers in a row, then we would act like he was the worst guy ever. And I guess another example of, like you could say Bryan Singer, like, right now people think, like, oh, he's a hack, he's not very good, he never was any good. And I kind of think the truth is somewhere in between. Like, they're both good filmmakers. Christopher Nolan is more of a, on a hot streak than anything. But, you know, Inception might not be that good. And maybe Batman 3 might not be that good. It's happened. Or should we take more of a moderate stance towards, like, these guys are talented. They hit some home runs and they hit some singles too. And that's just how it is, you know. So anyway, Thomas from Seattle. Also, I'm back on Twitter now at Tom_lawyerly. And I'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
There you go. Neil, I want you to answer this. Are fanboys fickle? I mean, is Christopher Nolan going to fall off his high horse if he makes a crap movie like Bryan Singer?
Well, here's the deal about fanboys. And I think it's an interesting discussion this week, because we're seeing a lot of material coming out about a lot of kind of hot geek properties like Captain America and Thor, and we got first looks at costumes and things like that. There's two things that always stand out about the kind of fanboy culture is that, one, they are resistant to change. Very resistant to change, to anything that doesn't, you know, feel familiar and things like that. Two is there's a great pack mentality. Yeah. So this is where you see things like, you know, Christopher Nolan becoming this kind of larger than life directorial figure, because there's this pack mentality around it. He makes, you know, 3-4 good films, and all of a sudden he can do no wrong. And I think what it does is it doesn't make them fickle. It just, they lose objectivity. So I think, really, the problem with, you know, where we're at with Christopher Nolan and with Inception coming up is that at this point, after The Dark Knight, there is nowhere to go for Christopher Nolan with the fanboy crowd.
How do you top this?
And, you know, before The Dark Knight, he had Prestige, which is a good movie. He had Batman Begins, which is an okay movie. And he had all these, like, decent movies, but The Dark Knight just blew people away. And everyone's expecting Inception to be that movie, so I think no matter how good it is, it's going to be a letdown.
Well, I think part of it is also the other thing with the fanboy culture is it's deceptively small. I'm going to say this, you know, with trepidation, because
it's deceptively big.
Well, it's deceptively
actually
big.
Small.
Yeah. It's small, but it's deceptively big because it has such a strong voice on the internet, which is where a lot of the news is going, where a lot of the buzz is being generated now. Nobody gives a crap about Entertainment Tonight. Things are, you know, it goes on Entertainment Tonight 2 weeks after it shows up on blogs and all that kind of stuff. And so while it's a very, very vocal fan base, it's not representative of the mainstream, and that's okay, but studios, I think, sometimes get confused. Kick-Ass is a great example, and Watchmen and Grindhouse and all these movies, Snakes on a Plane, that get all this support and then really underperform, but are, like, right on the money or even wildly successful for basically being a fanboy film. I mean, Kick-Ass was hugely successful for what it was. It's just, it didn't match the buzz it was generating because the buzz was coming from the fanboy culture. I think Scott Pilgrim's going to be the same way.
Right. Well, and I think that's a tough thing for studios, if you think about it, because, you know, they're constantly having to fight this battle between, you know, I think there's this fanboy audience, which is it's a pretty potent segment of moviegoers.
Yeah.
But it's hard to take those properties that people get really excited about on the internet and things like that, and translate them into mainstream success.
Well, and a lot of the fanboy favorites are going to translate to higher budget films,
right?
You know, if you're going to do if you're going to be like, we're going to do this, you know, this video game or comic book or something adaptation, you're going to have to throw some money into that, because it's not just going to be, you know, you're not making some kitchen sink drama or, you know, some, you know, little just,
you know, the other
love
problem
story
with fanboy culture is that they don't unite well.
No.
They'll
turn on you on a dime, and it's, well, like, and that's what Thomas was.
And here's,
because it happened with Bryan Singer. you know, once he did crap like Superman Returns, everyone hates him. And it happened to Sam Raimi. I mean, Sam Raimi, the first two Spider-Mans people gushed over. Mm-hmm. He makes Spider-Man 3 and everyone gets pissed at. And suddenly Sam Raimi shouldn't go near a comic book property for more
right.
movie.
Right. I think opinions aside, I think the problem with fanboys not being able to get anything done, they're like the Democrats. They're like the late 90s Democrats of moviegoers.
Okay.
Where if there's one thing you can learn about from Twilight, it's that the reason that Twilight is such a phenomenon is because its fans put money into the franchise.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I think fanboys don't necessarily put money into, you know, I didn't hear anybody going to see Kick-Ass 4 or 5 times. Yeah. You know, and then everybody's wondering why they're not jumping on making another one, because it didn't make enough money because fanboys didn't go see it, you know,
well,
because they all pirated it or something, you know.
On the converse, well, also there are a ton of half the fanboys saw it at free screenings because they did so much promotion.
Exactly, but they never went back, you know.
Yeah. But,
I saw
mean, take
it at
movies
free screening.
Like,
I actually went and paid for it to see it again.
Yeah. Well, but like take Avatar. It's two movies, Avatar and Alice in Wonderland. These are two movies that just very recently, within the last year, have done phenomenally well. I mean, Avatar obviously breaking every record, and Alice in Wonderland entering the $1 billion club. So obviously people saw it a lot more than, and in general, those movies were at the least sort of frowned upon in the fanboy community. Because Avatar, in the fanboy community, Avatar was not received well. Some people liked it. I liked it. You liked it. But it wasn't a, you know, people were like, oh, this is just a rehash.
Well,
of
we
this.
Are the tastemakers, though. So I guess that really kind of negates your argument.
Yeah. But also,
what I say goes.
But Alice in Wonderland, the fanboy community was venomous about hating that movie. Yet it makes $1 billion. That's, you know, the box office doesn't necessarily translate to quality, but it does translate to popularity, definitely.
Yeah.
And it shows that maybe the fanboys don't have their finger necessarily on the pulse exactly.
Well, it's, you know, it's just it's a niche audience.
Yeah.
You know, so and I think studios know when they have a movie that they need to go after a certain, you know, it's the 18 to 35 male demographic, really.
Well, and part of it is also back in before the fanboy critic. Like, if you go back to old school critics, like the 70s and the 80s, and these critics, the studios understood that, oh, they can release a Woody Allen movie. They're going to go get tons of critic support, and it's not going to do all that well, but it'll get awards or whatever. And they had, by that time, had learned how to court and manipulate and deal with the critic culture.
Right.
And the critic culture has totally changed now, and they just have no idea what they're doing. 5-10 years from now, I think it's going to be...
Well, that's because any schmuck could be a critic nowadays. But
that's okay.
A whole
that's
other
good,
discussion.
Though. But that's good. Anyways,
I don't think so.
I think so.
I don't know.
You're a schmuck.
There's some morons that have...
Dude, there were some morons back in the... It's just... Any schmuck in a newspaper could be a critic in the old days.
That's just true.
That's another...
True.
That's for another
totally
discussion.
Totally different discussion.
We've got one more voicemail to play. This is from Merrill from the Idiot Boxers and Celluloid Spotlight. I think he wanted to ask you a couple things.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, guys. Merrill here from the Idiot Boxers and Celluloid Spotlight. Neil, this question's for you. Since I know everyone else's thoughts on the two biggest finales of last week and possibly this decade so far, I was just wanting to know what were your thoughts on either on the Lost finale, which I know you did watch, and if you did watch it, the 24 finale as well. Also, by the way, I read your We Love Movies Bad Boys column. Spot on, dude. Couldn't agree more. Later.
Well, first of all, he's mentioned the Bad Boys Blu-ray. Did it? And we'll talk about this a little bit later. But does it have the same special features as the DVD, or is it just the movie?
It has the same special features as the DVD.
Okay, so it's just...
And the movie looks really good. I was really impressed. I wrote this in my column, This Week in Blu-ray, which hits Film School Rejects every Tuesday, that I really, really was very impressed with the transfer on that movie, because it's not a new movie. It was a film from 1995, and you really kind of get a sense that they did a lot of work cleaning that up.
Yeah.
So it looks great.
Okay. So what did you think of Lost in 24 finales? Were you happy with that?
I don't watch 24.
Okay.
Unfortunately. Although I'm eventually going to try and watch it, but I'm so far.
It's all on Netflix Instant.
You really? Can watch it all. Well, yeah. Once I get done with Breaking Bad, once I get caught up there, I'm going to go to that. Lost, you know, I didn't like it as much as my mom did, I guess. I had an hour-long argument with my mother the next day about why it didn't make sense. I think that Lost was the, you know, it was the finale that everyone saw coming, but no one really expected. And it's the safest way to end a show like Lost. And I feel like all of the problems that I have with the finale aren't really about the finale, but more about the last two seasons as a whole and the entire direction. Because I have a firm belief that right after season four, they had essentially the road diverged, and they chose one direction and had to stick with it, and they could have gone in another direction, and I would have preferred that. But it was.
See, what surprised me about the Lost finale
good enough, I guess.
Was, and I said this on the Idiot Boxers, I also said this when I was on the Golden Briefcase, I was stunned as to how many people didn't get it.
Yeah, that was a little weird. It was very, and that's why I say safe, it was very cut and dry what they wanted to say in that finale.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's literally
a scene at the end. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, there's literally a scene, there's a part where Christian Shepherd says, okay, this is real, this isn't real, this happened, this didn't happen, and he, like, literally spells it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally spells it all out.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that was missed. I mean, there's all these nuances, and, well, what about this, and this little thing's again. But, I mean, the general thing, it says this is real, this isn't, and people still didn't get it. And people were still, like, saying, oh, well, this was this, and I'm like, what, did you not watch it?
So. Yeah, and that was very confusing to me, because it was a lot more straightforward than I expected Lost to end. I actually kind of expected them to end with questions and to end.
Well, there are plenty of questions, but they're all like little questions.
Well,
like,
they're all little questions, and the big questions are what really kind of get frustrating. You know, there's a lot of big questions about some of the science fiction stuff in the middle seasons and a lot of that, and a lot of it. See, the problem with Lost is that trained its audience in the first three or four seasons to pay attention to everything. Everything is important. Every little detail is significant, and all of this stuff matters.
Yeah.
And by the time they got to the finale, they had disregarded about 80% of the stuff that we thought mattered.
Well, they were just treating it as Easter eggs at that point.
And it really it makes a lot of that stuff seem arbitrary, which makes it feel cheap, which makes the overall experience feel a little cheaper and not as enriching, you know, as if they really didn't have as much to say as we thought they did. And I think, you know, maybe they didn't, and that's fine. Yeah. You know, it was a sufficient series and a sufficient ending. I don't think it's as intelligent as, you know, Neil, watching season three, thought Lost was the most brilliant show of all time, and me now does not think that, because, you know, they just kind of pushed a bunch of stuff aside and said, well, that stuff really didn't matter. Okay. So,
which I think is funny, because most fans regard season three as the worst season.
I really like season three.
I
loved every minute of Lost up to season five.
Okay.
And I think from season five and season six, kind of, you know, like I said, they disregarded a lot of stuff that was important in the beginning, and that's disappointing. Sure. Anyway.
Okay. As we're way over time. Do we even want to bother with doing a Fat Guy 5, or should we just come back next week and do one?
We'll just do one next week.
Next week.
It really...
People aren't dying. I mean, when we miss the Fat Guy 5, we don't get hate mail.
No, we don't. Although we should this time.
Yes.
I mean, I would think. One would just assume that we would get it. Yeah. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to do all that stuff that we do at the end.
DVDs.
And now that hopefully you're still with us... process of wrapping up here in Fat Guys and Movies.
Sure.
And
you always come back with that last segment just so completely underwhelming.
Well, this week it's more of a exhaustion issue because that last segment was long.
It was long. And I did
so
push-ups.
So I'm trying to capture the spirit of the listener experience.
Okay. Well, it's good to know.
Because at this point, they're probably like, let's get this over with. Just tell me what DVDs to buy.
I think I like next week. Can you at least whelm me? I'm not asking to be overwhelmed. I just want to
be whelmed.
I just want to be perfectly whelmed next week. So
I've always wondered about that.
Yeah,
the whelming and under. Anyways,
yeah, and I'll be completely.
So it's time once again for the world famous DVD roundup. And I will start. I was going to say Burn Notice Season 3, but I'm giving that one to Kevin because I didn't get a copy of Burn Notice Season 3, and I haven't seen how it ends yet. So I can't say whether or not it's good. That said, I do like Burn Notice.
It ends where he goes into a church, and there's a coffin there, and it's and it's multi-denominational, his father's there.
Right.
Oh, wait, that's not Burn Notice. That's something else.
His mother's in there chain smoking, telling him like, about
Michael. What's going on?
Yeah, telling him about how he's gonna have to meet up with Bruce Campbell.
Everything in Miami was a dream.
Yeah, he and Bruce Campbell need to go find the Necronomicon and bring it back.
That would be awesome.
Before Fiona turns into a witch.
Do you know what's one of the best parts about Burn Notice Season 3 is they actually have Michael Weston as a guest star. The
actor Michael Weston?
Yeah, who's on House, and he was in Pathology and stuff. He's actually a guest star, and he's playing against
Michael Weston. I've partied with that guy before.
He's a really nice guy. He's a nice guy. I met him at the Pathology information at a couple years ago.
Yeah, no, I went out for the Pathology junket. Yeah. Nice, really nice guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of movies that I like... Here are my two picks this week. One is Bad Boys on Blu-ray. I would highly recommend if you're a fan of early Michael Bay stuff, as I am.
As you are.
Also, I'd recommend reading my Movies We Love article from Film School Rejects this week about Bad Boys.
Whatever.
It's a really excellent article.
Oh my gosh, you're pimping that out like crazy?
Yep. Well, it's a really good article.
Oh, okay.
I wrote it at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, that must be awesome then.
Anyway, the other one is Undisputed 3 Redemption, which is Isaac Florentine's third movie in the Undisputed series. It's basically a mixed martial arts movie.
MMA.
But it stars Scott Adkins, who played... He was the final like Weapon 11 guy in Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
He was also in the movie Ninja, which was awesome. You should check that out, too.
Is he any relation to Tom Adkins from like Halloween 3? And
no, but... Let me tell you, this guy is badass beyond belief.
Wow.
Also, Marco Zaror, this Chilean dude, who I swear is like 13 feet tall.
Wow.
And can flip. I mean, these are guys who can like jump from a standing position, flip forward, and kick you in the top of the head with the back of their foot.
I do that all the time.
I bet you do.
I do.
So there's some really awesome martial arts in this movie, and it's a really kind of cool fighting movie, especially if you're like a UFC fan, you want to see some like real fighting.
I just haven't watched it yet.
It's good. I enjoyed it.
I was gonna do a double feature, that and Valentine's Day, with my wife.
Well, yeah.
We got through Valentine's Day.
They are totally matched. Anyways,
my list.
Your turn.
Burn Notice Season 3 is on DVD. The season 2 was on Blu-ray. They're not releasing it on Blu-ray for whatever reason.
It's strange.
Which is weird. So it's on DVD. Alice in Wonderland. I am a defender of that movie. I liked it. I thought it was cool. I thought it looks great on Blu-ray. It looks fantastic on Blu-ray.
It does look better on Blu-ray than it did in the theater, but I liked it less.
Yeah.
The second
really?
Time.
See, I preferred it the second because I knew what I was getting. I guess part of it. The Wolfman. Okay, let's give a little bit of love for the Wolfman. It's if you get on Blu-ray, it's unrated. Have you seen the unrated? Not that it's really worth
it
unrated,
yet,
but they add 16 minutes to it, and it has all this introduction with Lawrence Talbot and Emily Blunt's character, where you actually think, oh well, this makes sense. Whereas in the in the theatrical version, he just kind of shows up, and you don't get any sort of pretext.
So the extended version is more sensical.
Yeah, it makes more sense. It still drags. But the werewolf scenes are the best. There's also Peanuts, 1970s collection, volume 2, 6 of their their TV shows,
which
TV
is
specials.
Way scarier than the Wolfman.
Awesome. And there's one that is has never shown seen on DVD before. And then also the Man with No Name trilogy on Blu-ray,
which I just recently got and cannot wait to watch.
Well, these look great. I mean, they released them separately on Blu-ray, but you can get them all in a 3-disc pack for Father's Day. And they come in a single pack. I saw The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly last year. They released that on Blu-ray. And these things look fantastic.
Right.
But I'm looking forward to getting a chance to revisit A Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More. So those are my ones.
For sure.
Those are my picks. Stinker of the Week is Wild Things Foursome.
Probably the most unwatchable movie ever.
They made a third one, too? I didn't even know they made a third one.
Dude, it stars one of the guys from O-Town.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, O-Town. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's
that
not
was
even,
a, that was a band.
I'm getting depressed. I don't even want to talk about anything.
Anyway, time to do our review wrap-up. We had four movies, Killers and Marmaduke, neither of which we could review this week because we did not see them. The Killers, though, gets a special note for
total
not
suck.
Screening nationwide.
Has to suck.
Get Him to the Greek, I said kinda rocks.
I said kinda rocks as well.
And then Splice, I did not see.
And I said it rocks. Next
so
week,
there you have it.
Next week we got the Karate Kid and the A-Team. Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
So check us out on Fat Guys of the Movies in the meantime.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum.
Down, down, down.